That's pianist Jack Wilson and his quartet featuring Roy Ayers on vibes with Ramblin'. It's the title track of their 1966 album with Monk Montgomery on bass, Varner Barlow on drums, completing the quartet. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. So we get to stretch out a bit, blur the lines. There are no strict lines here as to what it is you want to talk about. But we're interested in hearing from you a considered opinion about the subject, whatever the subject matter is that you're offering. And need not worry about what people think about what you said. We're interested only that you've taken the time to craft what you've said so that you get your point of view across and people can take it from there. We can either add to it, or we could question it, or whatever it is we want to do in terms of reacting to your very, very insightful opinion. That's done at 888-874-4888. You can call in and be part of one of this. I think it's the best talk fest in radio land. I really do. We are a stout-hearted bunch, and we have good manners, and we appreciate sincere effort and fair play. So that's the way I describe this program. We are a group of people talking, engaging with each other. There's no right or wrong. But if you think you differ, there's the opportunity to voice your own opinion about things. And that doesn't happen very much in media, because the media, the people who are, quote, hosting, are viewed as the quintessential authorities themselves on just about everything. There's no need to hear from the people. I differ markedly with that. Henry from Chicago, you get us started today.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
I'm hanging in. How are you?
Doing good. I wanted to talk to you about an interesting trip I took last week. I went to Haiti last week and wanted to talk about some of the things that I saw over there that, you know, kind of verified, you know, stuff that, you know, basically we talk about, you know, on the show and for people who know about the situation down there in Haiti. Well, you know, I had a good, you know, I had an enjoyable time going to the landmarks there. I've always been interested in Haitian history, and especially the Haitian Revolution. So it's one of those trips that, you know, it's like I got to go there to see all the stuff that I've been reading about for like years. And I kind of scratched off my bucket list now. But I also, you know, me listening to the show and listening to other concerned Haitians that are here and abroad talk about the stuff that's been going on there with the politics, why they're in so much poverty. And it's just amazing how you, when you're on the ground level and you start noticing the background of things that is causing a lot of strife over there in that country, you start to recognize that this is, you know, most of it is not the doing of the people here. And, well, for one instance, we all know about the rice deal that, you know, that Bill Clinton basically swindled the Haitian people of with removing the tariffs of rice imports. Well, when I was down there, whether I went to a Western-style store or to the regular markets in Port-au-Prince, it's just American rice, like, everywhere, and all from Arkansas. And you can't.
Yeah, well, that's Bill Clinton's that's and his brother-in-law,
yeah,
who has the monopoly on rice. Bill
yeah.
Clinton himself, as a matter of fact, actually admitted that he destroyed the agricultural sector of Haiti, because Haitians used to grow their own rice. They were accustomed to growing their own rice, and there was more than enough rice for everybody. But he destroyed that and instead made it so that the rice would be imported and his brother-in-law would have the concession to import or export, however you look at it, the rice.
Yeah, and Eutrice, the pricing there was ridiculous. And I mean, it's like pricing that, I mean, I wouldn't even pay here for rice. So I'm like, wow, they are really robbing these people, you know. And like you said, you know, the Haitians was able to grow their own rice and feed their own people. So it was like, I see American rice everywhere in this country that should be able to grow their own rice and feed their own people. And, I, you know, when I asked, you know, when I asked some of the people about the politics there and the politicians there, they're not too encouraged about the new president there or any of the politicians there, because they all feel they're, you know, they're kind of like puppet, you know, puppet government that's sitting in Port-au-Prince right now. So, it's a very, very, you know, sad condition that's going on, but it's not too far from what we're going through here, you know, because of the fact that, I want to also mention this too, because we were driving, me and my wife were driving across the country. We also went to Cap Haitien, which is also, which is in the northern part of Haiti. And as we're driving, we see all this farmland that's just everywhere. And we were just asking ourselves, this country could be making billions and billions of dollars and actually feeding their own people if they can utilize all this. Well, you know, what a couple of people have told us is that most of this farmland isn't owned by Haitian people.
No,
and
it's
so,
not.
And so that was one of the answers that we got. And we were like, wow, this is absolutely crazy. So, you know, what I wanted to say was, you know, this is, you know, like I just said a few minutes ago, this is something that we need to keep our eye on, because, like I said, it's not too far from what's happening to us here in the United States. So, I mean, I can go on for like hours talking about my experiences in Haiti, and I just wanted to bring, you know, just a couple of those things up, right now.
Well, that's good that you went. Did you just go, you know, as a personal visit? You just wanted to see Haiti, or was there another reason?
No, I went there as a personal visit. It's one of my things that I wanted to do in regards to, like I said, I'm very much into history. Yeah, and you know, it's like I have other places to visit as well, but like I said, the Haitian Revolution has always been one of my favorite things to study in history, and it's one of those things where, like, I got to go see some of this stuff, and I did definitely see the landmarks and everything that involved.
I'm glad you went, and I'm glad that you were able to bring back something to give us your impression. Are you going to go back again?
Oh, yes. I'm already probably making plans to go back next year as well. Oh, another thing, too, the presence of the UN there, which was, you know, I know the gentleman that comes on, Kim Ives, who comes and reports about it. Yes, he is absolutely right. I mean, we saw UN troops just absolutely everywhere. Everywhere, especially in Port-au-Prince.
It's an occupied island. It really is, by UN troops, and previous to that, by U.S. troops.
Yes, and that was the thing that we were wondering, because, you know, according to the UN Charter, they're not supposed to be there unless there's a war going on. And, you know, Haiti hasn't had an international war in like 200 years. So it's like we were asking that question, like, okay, why are they here? And they were armed as well. I had an argument with somebody about that when I came back, and they were like, "Well, the UN troops are armed." I'm like, "Oh yes, they are. I was there last week, and I saw them with the big guns." So Yeah, so I don't know where you got that from, but yes, they are armed too.
Yes, they are armed. Great to hear your account, and I'm glad that you went and saw for yourself, and even happier that you are planning to go back again and get a little bit deeper into the history of Haiti. Thanks a lot for calling
all
in
right.
today.
All right.
888-874-4888. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Utrice. How are you feeling? I hope your arm is
better. I'm hanging. Yes, a couple of things still to adjust here, but I'm hanging in and doing well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to call and let you know I see that the big payoff is starting, you know, for our boy, Barry Obama. $800,000 worth of work, I heard. $800,000 for 2 hours worth of work. Let me repeat that. I mean, Lord have mercy. That's more money than Hillary got for her.
Actually, he's getting $400,000. He has agreed to accept $400,000.
And from my understanding, he's done 2 speaking engagements for the total of 2 hours. One was for 30 minutes, and the other one was for an hour and a half. And now his pockets are fat. For $800,000 minus maybe 10% that he has to give to his agent. Ah, Barry, that's over $700,000. It's looking good now that Donald Trump is going to lower his tax rate. Ah, Barry's going to be a very, very, very rich man, and the people are still going to follow behind that fool. Oh, we in trouble.
Now,
America.
Let me ask, what essentially is your, but I got to ask you, what is your objection to his fee?
In all honesty, I don't have no objection. I don't even find it that much offensive based on the fact that I understand that he must be rewarded for, you know, the things that he's done, especially now that you got this bubbling idiot in the office that's just going to cause so much damage that it's going to make Obama's presidency look like sainthood. So, you know, it's all par for the course. It's all part of the game. I mean, I was seeing where Elizabeth Warren was a little bit upset about the amount of money that he's getting paid for his speeches. But listen, the man has to be rewarded. He has to be paid back. I mean, you know, I look at it this way.
Wait a minute. Everybody said the man has to be rewarded. He's got to be paid back. He was paid.
Yeah.
He was president.
No,
he got a salary.
He wasn't.
A lot
of
perks.
But he wasn't paid. He wasn't paid
He was paid what a president should be paid. Let's put it that way. He got his salary that he agreed to, all these perks that go with the job. He got all of that. So now he is in the private sector and he's making money on the pay scale in the private sector. I understand that people have problems with it. I just want to know what really is the problem.
Oh, no. There's no problem other than the problem that, you know, people have an issue with him, I would say, personally, getting paid. But, you know, my whole thing is more power to him. I just hope that he's able to make just as much money as the Clintons have, but he doesn't do the type of destructive things that they have done. And then again, on top of that, he couldn't get away with what the Clintons have gotten away with. They would not allow him to do to a country, let's say like Barbados, what the Clintons have done to Haiti. You know what I mean? It just wouldn't happen. You know what I mean? They're gonna allow him to make a lot of money. they're going to allow him to place himself into a position to where, as if black people in this country get out of line over the next couple of years because of the things that Trump is doing, that he'll be the person to try and get them back in line. And, you know, basically, you know, go on and do his thing. And, you know, I'm just interested to see if they will find another black person to put up in front of the system to calm people down, a.k.a. someone like Cory Booker, who was basically, you know, being groomed.
Cory Booker is nowhere in this league. He is not in this circle to command such a fee. There are some interesting things about this fee. I'm waiting to hear what people think, because it isn't just about... You may be hearing some background noise, and it's because landscapers are decided that this is the precise hour to do their work. So the leaf blowers and whatnot are in full swing. But there is something interesting about this $400,000 fee. And I'm waiting to see what the opinions are about it. You say, well, he is entitled to it, based on what the going rate is, and the going thing is get as much as you can. And he was successful at it. His agents and representatives were successful at it. But there's more to this than the $400,000, but we do get stuck at the $400,000. So let me hear some more about what you're thinking.
All right, well, one last thing. I would also, you know, like to know, have you heard anything in regards to what's going on with the Obamacare and now these taxes that Trump is implementing and in the direction that the country is seeing this presidency go? Because I really haven't been able to get a true feel from the people about what they're thinking about this guy. You know what I mean? Because you can't look at cable news and really get a true depiction. But I'm just wondering, you know, what's the word out on the street that maybe you or some of your listeners have heard?
We don't know. I did a whole thing just yesterday about this wonderful tax plan that the media, seasoned people in the media, have been reporting about Donald Trump's tax plan, which is one page. And they still don't know what it means. You know, you have the president presuming to correct the current U.S. tax plan or the tax code, which is 70,000 pages, and he shows up a day late and a dollar short with a one page thing, which of course primarily says the number one thing that needs to be done is to give the rich even more money and just, you know, throttle the working people. So I'm waiting to see a cogent analysis, but I've said from the very beginning, this man has no plans. There are no plans. And if we find that there is a plan, you can bet that it was because about 24 hours prior to announcing it, some group of people were corralled into a corner office somewhere and they produced, quote, a plan. This administration is total chaos, absolute chaos. So we still, though, have the media people adding to the problem, in that you would think somewhere we still have some decent folks who can decipher stuff and ask the same questions that I'm asking. You call this a plan? Is this really a plan? Is a one-page summary a plan? Is this what the President of the United States, is this the level at which he is going to be performing? The answer is we're in trouble, big trouble, and the conversations we ought to be hearing in all these various quarters of experts should be about, listen, this is an embarrassment. And beyond that, it is so dangerous to have somebody of this caliber, if you will, if I dare use the word, in charge of this nation and steering this nation. So it's a terrifying situation where we are right now. Thanks, Jay, for your call. Gwen, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I'm glad to get you on, Don. How are you? I hope the grass is growing green.
You know, I look, when people ask me, how are you? I just say, take a look at my arm for a minute and tell me how you think I am.
Well, I think I say that holistically.
But what you do is you just keep moving. Just keep moving.
It's truly true. People ask me that too, and I just answer, I'm okay. And I say the same thing as you do. I'm hanging in there. That's usually what I say, because it's been a tough year for me too. But I guess there was a couple of things that I wanted to ask you or talk about. First of all, I personally am really concerned about the famine that's going to take place in Yemen and Somalia, and there's two other countries. And it's really upsetting to me that we're like standing on the sidelines saying there's going to be this famine and it's going to be the worst one in history and we're not going to do anything about it.
It's already begun, as a matter of fact. And
right.
it not only concerns the history of corruption, and I mean, it's just a mess in in that part of Africa. But beyond that, here too, the United States, Donald Trump has a keen interest in Somalia and Sudan.
Yeah,
so
these
countries are among the people, I mean, among the countries that have come under renewed interest, quote unquote. While people are starving,
right,
there is so much in the way of resources, natural resources, that countries like the United States are exploiting or wanting to exploit. So that they are taking sides, they are arming people they shouldn't arm, and they're stoking the flames of all-out civil war. Israel has become extremely interested in Africa again, looking to exploit all of the resources that it possibly can, and in its quest to be a world player, a global player, and to put its hands on resources by any means necessary. And war is always a great invitation for these kinds of people and countries to come calling. So we have to watch. In fact, I'm in touch with some people there. We've been talking about what's going on at ground level. And you're right, it is not looking pretty, but it is. It has been described as a 100% man-made creation.
Correct. And so my question to the audience, and even for myself, I've already, I hate this feeling of helplessness. And I know this is going to sound very simplistic, but I'm thinking if the best I can do is do a GoFundMe page to get some food to Somalia. But, you know, then there's the next problem of how do you get it over there? And will the government take it? And will it be distributed? Or how do you get this money? I mean, these are all the questions that are in my mind right now. And I guess I'll have to research them. But it would be fantastic if, 1,000 people did a GoFundMe page for Somalia and Yemen, and we were able to get that money to the people that actually need it. I'm learning more and more that the government's just not there for me whatsoever. That's it. So in many respects, I think that, we've become in some ways a little too reliant on the government. And I think that we need to, sometimes take an action of our own, especially to show this government who's the boss. Which brings me to my next, assessment of Donald Trump was, I just wanted to say that The way the picture looks to me, you know, because every single person has a prerequisite of having to be a billionaire or they cannot have any posts in his cabinet. It looks to me more and more, and it's, you know, I just can't believe, I can believe it, but it's unbelievable that what it looks like to me is that the Trump is wants to be a king and sees himself as a king. And we're, you know, back, 600 years ago, and we're the people that are going to pay the most amount of taxes to the richest people in this country. And when I see that guy of his, and I'm so sorry, I can't remember his name. Maybe you can. This is the guy that he made head of the Federal Reserve. He's from Wall Street. They're all from Wall Street. But I see this guy get on there, and he's so
I can't
corrupt.
Recall the name directly, but, you know, right. Goldman Sachs is running the country and is
right.
running the economy. It's
right.
pretty much
and,
what you
and,
can
and
say.
And now we are being asked to pony up all kinds of money. And let me just remind you something, that we were hit very badly under Bush with the tax cuts then. And I remember going to see a senator in New York speak, and she said, listen, these taxes are going to be paid. You know, somebody's going to pay for them. The rich people aren't going to pay for them, but you are going to pay for them. And we did. And all of a sudden, I noticed weird things happening where I worked, where every single person I was working with practically was being audited by the IRS. And people were capitulating and not even questioning it because they were so afraid of them. And to me, that's one of the ways that the government was able to recoup the losses or get the money they needed for the Bush tax cuts. I was very disappointed when Barack Obama came in that everybody forgot about them. They were supposed to be rescinded. They were never rescinded. And so on top of, you know, these terrible, massive tax cuts from Bush administration, now I'm being asked to, yeah, I take it that personally. I got to pay for the party of these fat cats at the top, who to me, and you said this yesterday, and you're 100% right, I actually think they need a 12-step program, okay? I think DeVos needs one, and Trump needs one. Bloomberg needs one. These are the people that will never have enough money because it doesn't exist for them. Their appetite is so insatiable that it comes down to mental illness. Because honest to God, what are you going to do with all that money? And so we have these mentally ill people running the country. They have no allegiance to this country or the people that are living in it. They are there to make personal gains for themselves. And we're sitting here just watching it. And you know, every day you ask, what are you going to do about it? And I, you know, it's, you know, there's probably only one thing we can do about it at the end, and I'm not going to say it, but just saying that it looks pretty bad for us.
It looks pretty bad. And I'm hoping that in the same way you just discussed, you know, about how these things came to light to you, as frustrating as it is, you're still in a good place because you've been able to make sense of exactly that, where you are with regard to a system and where the system is with regard to you and me and the rest of people in the United States. And we have to come back to the basic question of what the heck is government for? Why do we need a government? Why do we need a Congress? Why do we need any system that pretends that it is about being very fair and that the people elected and put in these positions are actually qualified to do what they're doing, and that therefore our trust is well placed in the capacity of these people to discharge their duties. No, we do not have competent people for the most part. We do not have an honest system for the most part. We have a system, an organized system of thieves. And
exactly. The mafia is running the United States government. And you want to know something?
That's it.
In The Godfather, they said they were going to do it. And guess
how
what?
How we get out of this is a problem.
I see this
we have
guy
to figure out how do we get out.
Those big chiclet teeth. It seems like everybody that works for Trump has to have their teeth covered with chiclets. And so I saw him yesterday basically telling us to stand down. This was Trump's plan, and you'll find out when you need to find out. If one more government agency tells me on my dime that they're going to tell me when they're ready to tell me, give me a break. I don't know how this guy is going to be impeached, but he must be impeached. But the most important thing is not only that he's impeached, but the entire cabinet goes with him. Because every single one of these people, as you well know, is a very smart carcinogenic person that is here to infect the United States and to steal as much as they can. So I, and again, I've been thinking also about the systems you talked about the other day. I've been thinking very hard about it. And, you know, it is perplexing because it's very dangerous to go up against this government. Let's face it. They're already listening to all your telephone calls. They're monitoring your computer. You turn your TV on, guess what? They're watching you back. What are they planning for? I don't know, but it doesn't look good for us. So I think that's one of the things that people are very aware of, is that how much we are being monitored, how much we are being looked at. You know, I remember that the minute I began speaking out against Bloomberg, I never, ever got another article in the New York Times again. That was it. People thought I fell out of activism for, you know, my whole life. And that's not what happened. Bloomberg owns Bloomberg Press and is friends with all of those people at the top. And that's how fast they can turn the spigot off on you. And it's a very frustrating place to be in America, because we really don't have a free press. And without the press, very little can be done. Very little activism can be done unless the press is there watching it and reporting it and putting the news out there.
Well, now the task seems to be that with the knowledge we have acquired and the knowledge that we have about how certain systems work, then we have to up our game so that we can be ahead of them and still accomplish the mission that we started out with. And that is, I think, where we are right now in the country, that we're beginning to make sense of how the system works. And we're seeing more and more how global it is. It's not just local or statewide or nationwide. It is global. And we therefore have to kind of spend some time understanding how we prepare for resistance, if you will, and opposition to a system that has become extremely sophisticated, not just only by technology, but by propaganda. There are so many tools, as you just said, so many ways in which they can control even our will, even our energy to fight. So still we must do it. We have to continue. We have to learn new ways of fighting.
We have no choice. Just one suggestion before I get off, just one suggestion I wanted to make. I really, as I said, took the question of systems quite seriously. And I wondered if one day, as part of the radio show or as the radio show, we could do a town forum on your audience and their suggestions for systems and new systems. And, you know, maybe if we all put our heads together, we can come up with something. I don't know. It's just food for thought. Just putting it out there.
It's great food for thought. In fact, I'm working on something like it, and hopefully we can get that done soon. Thank you so much for your call today. From Tokyo, Yasu, you're on the air.
Oh, I didn't expect to be on so suddenly. Well, greetings to you, Trish Lead, and also the most intelligent radio audience that I have heard so far.
Thank you.
I will keep it short, because a couple of times before I was either tired or something and I rambled on too long. But yeah, so in Japan, North Korea and China and South Korea and all that, yeah. So Trump is the chaos bringer. But in the ancient proverb that the Chinese have, with chaos, there's always opportunity. And it may look like that we're actually going to resolve it without killing each other. And so, but the really, really surreal part of this is that the South Koreans are the least concerned of the people, even though they're right next to the ones that could potentially utterly annihilate them. But that is that. You know, people, normalcy bias. And with normalcy bias, any kind of crazy thing doesn't seem to be so realistic. So in Far East Asia, you know, Japan is hunkering down. People are buying nuclear bunkers while South Koreans are just going about their own normal way. It's just so crazy. So funny. Anyways, I have a lot to say, but it'll take too long. So I just wanted to mention that in the Far East, where it seems like people aren't so worried for some reason.
Well, don't forget, they, above all people on the planet, have a very vivid memory of what apocalypse looks like and feels like.
Oh yes, we all know.
So they have already, this almost is ingrained in their systems. And so what we would regard perhaps as people being, well, kind of nonchalant, they probably have done some other work, kind of spiritual or inside work, to just bring them to a position of calm and to keenly observe how the situation is developing and not to freak out, because they've been there already.
Yeah,
they're the world experts at not, freaking out, even if the situation doesn't look good. And perhaps especially when the situation doesn't look good, the first thing to do is to remain calm, because the reality is that they're not in charge. We are all not in charge. This is the thing. We are all not in charge.
Yeah, we are passive observers, unfortunately.
Yeah, but a whole different system is running life globally now. And all we can do is react. We do not have systems of our own to stop what could possibly come next. But they have already been through it.
Although the interesting thing about in Japan, for example, is that we all know that the SH hit the fan plan, and that we all have it in the back of our mind. It's a population with a lot of martial artists, as well as that we have a neighbor that always hated us. And of course, my Chinese wife would say that I'm an ultra-rightist on the explanation of why China and Korea hate Japan so much. And it's a very long story if I have to explain why they are wrong and Japan is not as evil as Gary Noll and others would characterize us. But yes, Japan is a gendered society, but Korea is almost literally our brother. Genetically speaking, our brother and sister. In Japan, this is underneath the news, planning on the worst that could be, because Donald Trump says one thing, but the Russians, the Chinese, the Japanese, none of us can really rely on what has been said. It's like the worst of all worlds. You know, if we had George Bush, we can say that he's just a loony guy and let's look at what Dick Cheney would say, and then we can prepare for it. But with Donald Trump, he seems to be pretty tough and in charge because he contradicts whatever else has been said. But nevertheless, the administration suddenly goes on certain activities or offensives that nobody was informed about. So yeah, in Japan, we're just in prepare for the worst and hope for the worst. No hope for the best anymore.
I see what you're saying. And that is a sad reality because people have been there. They have been through this and it has been passed on generationally. Like any unpleasant situation for for African Americans, the experience of slavery was not sufficiently discussed families because of the incredible pain. So there are a lot of people today who should be very clear about what slavery was. The whole nation needs to be clear, but I'm talking about that targeted sector of our society who were so reluctant to discuss it. It was so painful. It was so demoralizing. It was just so hopeless. So there are many stories still to be known, many histories still to be told all around the world where people have suffered unimaginably. And here we have the situation bringing us right back to that point, and perhaps being calm in the face of pending doom or impending doom is one of the ways in which they choose to react to it. Great to hear from you, Yasu. Thanks for calling in. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
Hi. Where you just left off about slavery, I think it would be important for most people to read Douglas Blackman's book, Slavery by Another Name. You see, because with the 13th Amendment and the end of chattel slavery, slavery just took another form and continued on to this day. So people need to read a book like that, and that'll give them a good picture. You know, yesterday I got onto system analysis, and I'd like to continue with this today. Because,
Go ahead.
What's been going through my mind is that the system that we have here is working perfectly for those people who controlled the system here. The ruling class has a system that is just doing fine for them. And people need to understand that system and understand the mission of the system to do anything about it. Now, the system is so successful, it is able to morph from one thing to another to deal with any kind of thing that looks like rebellion. They have complete control of the legislative branch with vassals in place at the state level, at the federal level, at the local level. The system is working fine. Those people are in service for those oligarchs who run the system. And people have to understand that. As I see it, the only way that is going to really change is a rebellion among the people that are here, the masses of people. However, the system is prepared for that. It's got the military. It's got the police who've been militarized. And it has got all kinds of ways to disarm people who want to resist the system by throwing them a couple of bones now and then. And that's what they're doing. So during the Roosevelt era, they threw out of bones. And after the Second World War and with Reagan, and they said, well, it's time to take back the bones. And they've been taking them back, and now they're at the championship level, because look what they're doing now. They're reversing all of the things, taking back the bones from the people, and doing everything they can. They've got Trump up there. He can put on comedy shows for the people, and the people don't understand. It's even tragic to read the newspapers. Yesterday, I was looking at the August New York Times, and they had these little people. They were mostly little white people, and they were celebrating what Trump did with bombing in Syria. I just wondered, as I read that, if these people understood exactly what was going on, and you know, they were just celebrating the greatness of America being able to bomb President Bashar. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. So as I see it, the system is working perfectly for the ruling class that runs this country.
Well, you pointed it out, but here is the question. A system has to be flexible in order to prevail, because life is constantly changing, and the Amen. Conditions of life are constantly changing. What do you see as the ways in which this system is now operating? What has it adopted that is different from, let's say, not too long ago? You referenced previous administrations and how the system prevailed throughout these administrations. What are some of the key ways in which the system has transformed itself? It has morphed itself, as is the word you used. It has morphed itself. In what way has it morphed itself?
That's an excellent question. It morphs itself all the time to meet the needs, the perceived needs to maintain itself. I'll give you some examples. For example, over the years, the last few years, the system has placed African Americans in position of high places. So, you know, in the African American community, people say, isn't that wonderful? This person is the head of this or that or the other. But the system has not changed. They've just put a person of color in that position. That's one thing that they do. They have done things like open up areas where there was great resistance in the past. You know, those who have read my book, Playing the Game, and, you know, I'm involved in aviation. At one time, they wouldn't let black people be pilots. Now, I was looking at one magazine. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I saw a airline advertisement, and they had a black pilot in there because they're shortage of pilots now, and they had this black pilot in there, and I was just, you know, absolutely amazed. So the system morphs into what it has to do to keep going. That's why they let Barack Obama be president. If they didn't want him to be president, they have had all kinds of ways that they could have stopped him. He couldn't be there if the system didn't give the thumbs up. So when they got the thumbs up for Barack Obama, he got in there, and that silenced a lot of African Americans who would not say anything critical about what Obama was doing. So the system has many ways of controlling the masses of people, and it is very good at it. And Trump is bombastic as he is with his histrionics and so forth. When the rubber hits the road, he's going to be in the service of those rulers that at the top, the oligarchs that run this whole place.
Why, then, do you think, this is something that Yasu was just referring to, why aren't we kind of linking these things and making sense of this kind of analysis that you're discussing, systems analysis? Why we clear that the system has a unique ability, I'm going to borrow your word again, morph itself in order to achieve certain ends. Why doesn't the same attitude, why doesn't the same methodology exist with the resistance?
Well, I think they are very successful because they can distract people. And they distract people with entertainment and sports and all kinds of other things to get people's attention from what really people have to do is do analysis of the system and plan a strategy to change it. So they're very good, you know, with propaganda, with Freud's relative Bernay and his propaganda. They're excellent at that. So they can get your attention away from the things that you should be thinking of and do as Theodore Allen explains very well in his book, The Invention of the White Race, dividing up people and having them against each other. And this country is a wonderful cauldron for that because you have so many ethnic and so-called racial groups here. They are excellent in playing people against each other, and that helps them maintain their control of the system. It's not like it is in Switzerland or Norway or Iceland, and they cannot do
that. Because you have
there.
A generally homogeneous population there.
Yes, that's right.
It's not as fractured as U.S. is.
That's exactly, and that's an important factor because they can't play the game of corporate capitalism in their favor as well as it can be played here. Now, the United States would be the major leagues in maintaining corporate capitalism because they've got these diversity situations that they can play upon and ability to scapegoat to the highest degree. So that's the situation that the people have in this country. And, you know, that is a big problem for us. But long and short of it, as I see it, the system is working for those who benefit from the system.
Absolutely. Thank you for your call and for your analysis and for your contribution today, David. Great to hear from you. Khalil, here's some bad news. We're short on time, but I do want to hear something from you today. What will it be?
Hi. Can you please?
Hello.
Hi. That's great, because the main thing I wanted to say, I heard Gary Null say last week that you had the second most popular program on PRN, and I want to congratulate
yes.
you, and I think that's a wonderful
Thank
thing.
Thank you. It's our program.
Well,
it's our program.
You're doing. We are. You and we and everyone is doing. You're doing something right. So I think that's a great thing. And that's
Thank
really
you.
All I wanted to say. That's all I wanted to say.
So. Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because it is a rare thing, especially in this day and age, that you have a place. An electronic gathering place where we can all come together and have a chat and talk. Because I really believe, I've said this all of my life, we do the best work when we do the work together. And without, you know, saying, well, this person has X number of degrees and the next person, you know, has all these years of experience. We all have something that is unique to us that could help in the aggregate task of moving ahead. But we would never know that unless we are in touch with each other, which is why PRN is extremely valuable. And this is why I value this program, because we kind of come together. And the whole point of it is to exchange ideas and information. And I mean, in this program alone, we started out with a young man from Chicago who, because of his exposure to the program, just said, you know what, my wife and I, we're going to go to Haiti and see for ourselves what's going on there. And then today he relates what he observed, and he tells us that he's going to go back. Now, this is a victory, because a program, just by the exchange of information, we are motivating people to go beyond what they typically see as their limits. You know, I'll read it in a book, but he says, I'm going to go see for myself. That's extraordinary. Khalil, thank you so much for calling in today and expressing those sentiments. It's very, very heartening. And thank you all for contributing to the program, as usual today, with your considered thoughts and opinions. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always you can find something of value in that program. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. It's a pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. And of course, it's the weekend. Surround yourselves with really positive people doing positive things. And put on your sneakers and run like hell away from people who are not. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.